Welcome to the Creative Strengths Podcast. I'm your host, violinist Christian House. In case it's your first time stumbling onto this podcast, I'll tell you who it's for and what it's all about, and I'll tell you specifically why you should listen to this episode. The Creative Strengths Podcast is for musicians and music teachers who want to grow their skills and reach their fullest musical expression. The way we help you do that is by sharing tips, actionable strategies, and stories to hopefully give you inspiration as well as shortcuts to make your practice and growth more efficient. I want to give a huge thanks to our sponsor, Electric Violin Shop. My favorite thing about Electric Violin Shop is their phone support. What this means is that if you ever have a question about gear from electric string instruments, pickups, accessories like effects pedals, PAs, speakers, amplifiers, and more, call Electric Violin Shop at their phone number and a human being will speak to you during business hours. Find their phone number, go to electricviolinshop.com. And then call them and they will answer any questions you have. It'll save you a lot of time. Now let's get into this episode. Everybody, I'm here with Marcello De Francesco, and we are reviewing his PhD project. And I'm going to read the introduction, then I'm going to answer the questions. So the introduction, the genesis of instrumental learning comes from the oral tradition through which imitation and improvisation play a fundamental role, both in so-called cultured, and that's in quotes, cultured, and popular music. Originally, the transmission of information and melodies, but also performance practice took place by ear. As for the violin, with the development and evolution of its morphological characteristics, the Baroque period saw a consequent improvement in instrumental technique and a broadening of the repertoire. Violinists reached a pinnacle of knowledge that enabled them to perform, compose, improvise, and even influence the progress and constructive aspects of instruments. Corelli, Geminiani, Tartini, Viotti, Pugnani, and Paganini possessed these qualities. They were excellent performers, far-sighted teachers, superb composers, great innovators, and skillful improvisers, an essential trait for past practitioners. With the advent of Romanticism, the technical and repertorial evolution of instruments acquired such importance that the initial paradigm was altered. Harmonic dexterity and improvisation, fundamental in popular music and absolutely essential in Baroque works, were almost completely abandoned to make way for the learning of technical practical skills oriented toward the virtuosic interpretation of complex passages in the orchestral and solo repertoire. Moreover, it seems necessary to consider the enormous influence of other forms of expression, such as literature, art, and philosophy, which have determined stylistic, formal, and aesthetic evolution in the field of music as well. The practice of improvisation, which was profoundly individualistic and determined by the performer's abilities, tastes, and aptitudes, was progressively set aside to follow the principles of the romantic Wagnerian philosophy of the quote-unquote unique creator or the quote Superman. Thanks to it, a progressive disqualification of the performer occurred, who became a mere executor. The advent of jazz in the early 20th century allowed musicians to rediscover their lost connection with the art of improvisation, raising their skills to increasingly complex and incisive levels through a common conception of creativity. Although a common conception of creativity is that it belongs exclusively to the artistic dimension, and it is a reality that instrumental practice is one of the most popular artistic disciplines, no structured activity dedicated to improvisation is contemplated within the instrumental educational itinerary. What is more, there is no trace of it in the curricular documents of the different levels. The creative dimension of learners remains a mere mention on tape, on paper, in the educational system of several Western countries. Although improvisation is one of the objectives mentioned in the different structural learning areas, today, in the era of the fourth industrial revolution, in which computational thinking, algorithm construction, and artificial intelligence tend to replace not only labor, but also human thinking, in addition to the undoubted advantages, a number of problems arise. Isolation, the rarefaction of spaces for dialogue and socialization, the gradual sidelining of many cognitive skills, as well as a growing tendency toward homogenization. The objective of this interview is to stimulate reflection and validate the assumptions and hypotheses underlying this research, to recognize the potential of the practice of improvisation within the educational process, both in the itinerary of musical training and during the study of the musical instrument, as well as the importance of promoting activities in the classroom that stimulate the development of musical creativity in students. The subjects some of the world's leading exponents of the jazz violin and important teachers involved in improvisation. Goals, the objectives to be achieved through the interviews are as follows: to establish the motivations for choosing to devote themselves to research and study modern music and improvisation, and which artists inspired and encouraged the interviewees to begin their aesthetic and artistic research. To verify the existence or absence of different forms of support from institutions for teachers in the academic field. Obtain new definitions of improvisation from violinists who have devoted their careers to the study of it. Analyze what musical contexts have fostered experimentation and acquired different accounts of the role schools and institutions have or have not taken in creating conditions and contexts that foster creative development. To find out whether institutions and teachers have encouraged listening to non-classical music, attending concerts where improvisation is practiced, and the use of musical notation involving the writing of chordal signatures. To know the influence of the practice of improvisation in the music education process and to measure its importance in the musical life of the respondent. To understand their personal sound and emotional world, relationships with others, and its contribution to the development of skills, including that of instant problem solving, memory, and the ability to understand harmony and musical elements. To understand the effects of interaction within a jam session, in an improvisation workshop, or during a live performance, gain an understanding of how this can be a quote-unquote life gym, a democratic time to learn how to listen, dialogue, support each other, take turns, taking dialogue initiatives, gain awareness about ways out of social isolation, detecting the relationship between improvisation practice and management of stage anxiety, determining whether such practice can help the student by giving additional tools that help him or her in managing anxiety through a live performance, getting to know the role of technologies, developing the previous point, gain opinions and advice on how to cope with the era of the fourth industrial revolution, to learn about the role of the study of improvisation after the advent of artificial intelligence in developing creativity and promoting musical, cognitive, and individual creative skills, to acquire suggestions to give to students who have never improvised, to help teachers who are unaware of the potential of improvisation and see it as a danger, an obstacle to the development of technique, and a potential distraction to musical genres seen as less cultured. Wow, this is amazing. I'm so excited. Marcello, I'm ready to answer your questions. I know this is going to be really interesting to everybody. So should we just go through these questions one by one, or is there anything else we want to think about before we do that?
One by one. Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for your time, to dedicate your time for this interview. It's very important for me, for my job. The reason is to understand from one expert like you, your opinion, your life, your experience during your life, during your study, and during your career. To, first of all, like a student, and then like performer and teacher. And your contribute with your website, with your videos too, it's very important for everything of us in the world, I think. And the first question is, what motivations prompt you to seek other forms of unconventional music expression through the study and practice of exoclassical music? Jazz, rock, electronic, or others popular to country, bluegrass, other music that is not classic?
Yeah. So for me, I was about 15 or 16 years old, and my friends were playing in a rock band. And I was motivated to join their rock band so that I could connect with my friends. And that was like one of the first steps for me. So I started to play electric bass. I started to play electric guitar. And then gradually I started to incorporate electric violin into the rock band. But that was the beginning for me when I was about 15 or 16. And then after that, there was a series of other experiences, which were all similarly motivated by meeting people that played music in different situations. And so then that drew me in to wanting to learn other styles of music and other contexts for musical improvisation. But that's probably a longer story, so I won't go into that. So your second question.
Which artist inspired you the most, prompting you to embark on your own personal aesthetic and artistic?
It's hard to say which artist inspired me the most. And again, it's been an evolution throughout my life. So beginning when I was 15 or 16 and started playing in a rock band, I was motivated by Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix. I listened to James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, The Police, Def Leppard, Van Halen. It was a real mix of music growing up in the 80s in high school. So listening to even REM and like the Violent Femmes. It was a broad mix of music from the 70s and the 80s that mostly was like popular music that kind of inspired me to start questioning not just about improvisation, but really questioning how music was constructed as like a composer to be able to interpret the music outside of the classical framework, beyond just reading melodies off a page.
What support or resistance did you find in improvisation? What support or resistance did you encounter in the social context from teacher, from teachers, colleagues, fellow students, family?
Yeah. So I would say that a lot of my friends who played in the rock band, they really encouraged me and I was inspired by them. And a lot of my other friends who weren't as 15-year-olds listening to pop music and rock music, they wanted to come out and listen to the band play more than they didn't listen to me play classical music as much. So there was some support socially for that. But then at other times, there was less support for that from teachers. My teachers weren't necessarily against it. But I think later when I started getting into jazz and getting more serious about that, I was really going the direction of jazz music, especially this would have been in like 1996, when I really decided like I was going to be a professional jazz musician. There are a lot of people in the symphonic world who just didn't understand it. And they just weren't particularly interested in it. And they thought it was weird. And also when I played the violin in the jazz context with other jazz musicians, they also thought it was weird. So I felt isolated when I was starting my career. I felt like a lot of people in some situations were just looked at me like I was weird. Now, on the other hand, you could say it had an advantageous accent, an advantage as well, because some people thought it's novel. So there's an advantage in that as well, because not everybody else is doing it. So I would say that's how I experienced that. I would say a lot of jazz musicians assumed, because I played the violin, that I could not play jazz. And they made those assumptions based on probably experience they had with other violin players and seeing that most violin players are not used to playing jazz. And I would say that most classical musicians were not interested in jazz and that they thought that it was weird. They didn't understand it. They would listen to jazz music and they would think, oh, it's out of tune, or oh, it doesn't sound together, or whatever. And so they were like analyzing the music through a different lens. They hadn't really given the music enough time to appreciate it. And just for me, that was the same experience when I first started listening to jazz when I was probably 19 or so. And I really started to listen to jazz. I couldn't really appreciate it. And it took many years for me to be able to appreciate jazz. And I continue to appreciate it more and more as I listen to it more. Yeah, that's what I'd say about that. Now, the fourth question, you said, what does improvisation mean to me?
Yes. Yes, it's a personal question.
It's a good question. First of all, I would say that we want to be creative as musicians, in some way, we want to find our own voice. We want to be able to sound like ourselves and differentiate ourselves through how we play. I think that any human being can relate to that, to wanting to have a sound, a voice, to be a distinctive personality and to have that come through how we play. And I think that this can happen in the realm of being an improvising performer, but it also can happen when we arrange music or compose music. And I think that it can show itself, the voice of the improviser can show itself in different ways, in different contexts. So for example, I am a very eclectic musician. I have many eclectic tastes. I like to play bluegrass. I like to play modern jazz. I like to play free. I like to play pop music. I like to play electronic dance music. I like to play blues. I like to play R&B. I like to play straight ahead jazz. I don't mind playing like early swing even. So in all of these different contexts, I think that I am going to show up perhaps differently, because I can honor each of those traditions and I can show up in a certain way as myself in those different contexts differently. But there will be some aspects of me that are the same, but it may not be recognizable to everybody. So if you hear me play like on a romantic schmaltzy manouche jazz ballad or something, I might play very differently. You might not even recognize me, as opposed to be playing on like a 1960s John Coltrane piece. Like I might play just completely differently and somebody might not even recognize that it's the same player. Those are some things I think about improvisation. I think for me, it's really valuable as an equalizer, not only for me, but for students, because there are lots of musicians who can do special things, who can play faster than me, and musicians who can play harmonically more complex than me or with a bigger sound than me. But by me having my own voice, this makes me equal to other people. It gives a certain validity and usefulness and value to what I bring that is different than what somebody else brings. And so I think this is really valuable for students as well, because students of all ages, because in classical music, if we're always being measured by only one person gets to play the solo and it's the person who plays the best, Tchaikovsky or whatever, the most accurate Tchaikovsky, improvisation is so valuable. Last night, I gave a lesson to a student. She's probably in her 60s. She's been playing for a long time. I listened to her. She said, she sounded delightful. She sounded wonderful. I loved hearing her play. I could never hear anybody else sound like her. So that's just really validating. So that's what, I think that's partly what improvisation means to me. The next question you gave me here, in what environments did I have the opportunity to begin practicing playing by ear or without traditional notation? Is this where your personal musical experimentation began? No, it's not, because I started playing Suzuki violin when I was 5 years old by ear. And I think that, so I learned classical music by ear. Then when I was 6 or 7, I started to read as well. But the ear was trained very early on and it was not tied to improvisation. And later on, when I learned to improvise, I used my ear, but that wasn't the sole way that I learned improvisation. Because we've worked together, that I've used a lot of theoretical concepts. I use writing. I use many processes to study improvisation, many ways, not just by ear.
I remember that you started to play in the church too with gospel. I don't remember this exactly. In gospel church with violin.
Yeah, that's true.
And in that situation too, I think you don't have the part of the violin, but you have to create immediately.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, working in gospel church scenarios and many other scenarios, I have used my ear and learned by ear, but it doesn't represent the only way that I've approached it though. It's only one part of a multifaceted approach that I've used for improvisation, to study improvisation and to teach improvisation. So
yes.
I don't see it as being inextricably linked. I believe that there are some people that lean more heavily on ear processes. Some people lean more heavily on written or analysis or discursive processes. And I think that it can be useful to have a combination.
Okay. Your opinion about the sixth question. Do you feel that schools and musical education institutions have done enough to create conditions, context to encourage the creative development of students?
No, I don't. I think that most of the teachers in, at least within the classical music community and also in the United States, that would be like orchestra teachers in middle schools and high schools, the vast majority have not explored improvisation or
musical creativity in the ways we're talking about. They haven't, and I would go beyond just talking about improvisation, because when I teach, I'm teaching functional musicianship outside of classical musicianship. And to me, this involves the practical understanding of harmony, groove, song construction, arranging, and improvisation in kind of foundational universal ways that apply across many contemporary styles. And I think that jazz studies, the canon of jazz studies, does a good job of teaching similar things, but it makes a big mistake by limiting the teaching of harmony and groove and song construction to only certain stylistic works within the jazz canon. And so it's now, of course, there are more global thinkers in the jazz community now, but another way to describe this is like jazz institutions are largely saying, hey, we're going to teach you how to play 2-5-1s over Charlie Parker tunes, learn licks, and play the blues and swing and all this stuff, which is great. I love all that stuff. But I'm saying you're missing out because most people need a bridge to that. And so the way I teach is I can teach jazz. I do teach jazz to people who want that, but I also am teaching people how to just understand harmony, rhythm, arranging, composition in like fundamental, universally applicable ways. So in my like Zoom classes or my camps or my workshops, I'm taking a lot of classical musicians through exercises that allow them to improvise out of the scale, improvise without harmony, improvise over chords, understand voice leading, deal with groove, learning the bass line, learning the inner voices of many types of songs and many different types of. And those skills, those foundational skills, those universally applicable skills of harmony and voice leading and song construction are not understood by 98% of all the orchestra teachers in the United States. So they can't teach it because they don't understand it themselves. And the college music education, the college music education programs. Yeah, and a lot of people in Europe, like yourself, you've probably said this to me before, a lot of people in Europe or any place, insert any place around the world and people will always say to me like, where I live, we're a little bit behind. No, you're not behind. It's the same everywhere. It's the same in Italy. It's the same in Singapore. It's the same in Australia. It's the same in Europe. It's the same. Wherever there is a culture of violin playing, wherever there is a culture pretty much of classical music being taught, being played, I would say based on my experiences and the people that I work with all over the world, it's pretty much the same. America is not really ahead of everybody else. We just have a bigger country, so you might find a little more. But so yeah, it definitely, they have not done enough, and that's because they're just not qualified yet to. So it's this cycle that we're breaking. But there hasn't been massive change since 1996. I only use 96 because that's when I started my career and I started to think about changing this culture. And for example, in the American String Teachers Association, I've been going for the last 20 years, every year, I've seen a massive shift. There's a massive shift now of just for people being interested. They're interested in what we might call pursuing eclectic styles, learning eclectic styles beyond just classical music. There's an interest, but there's still a deep lag in terms of ability and understanding. But yeah, that's that. Now you said, did my educational institutions during my formative years encourage my participation and did they help me? So when I went to Ohio State University, the classical program there, I was a performance major, then I was composition major. I switched to composition. Eventually I moved to philosophy. I got my bachelor's degree in philosophy, but I did interface with the jazz department. And so I had a teacher at Ohio State University whose name is Ferez Witted. And he is a wonderful jazz trumpet player in Chicago. And he gave me private lessons. And that was valuable. That was very valuable for me. I was able to access people within the jazz department that were willing to help me. And so that was useful. That was useful. But I would say that in general, institutions do not provide enough support for classical musicians for how they can become more creative without just going into a jazz direction. It was lucky that I wanted to go into a jazz direction, but there's lots of classical musicians that aren't ready for that. And so they don't even know. So that was why I switched to composition. Then I switched to philosophy because I wanted to just go pursue my jazz career. So my education really came from being, quote unquote, on the streets, learning in clubs, jam sessions, things like that. And I've seen that has continued where there's still problems. Like my oldest child went to Oberlin, which is highly regarded as one of the top conservatories in the world. And they have a top jazz program. They have a top classical program. But that was fraught with problems from the get-go. The fact that the institution would not allow the student. No, not just that. It was in this case, you have a student that wants to apply. They have to choose between the jazz or the classical program. And they can't even apply for the jazz program on violin necessarily. So it's really, it's when you're applying to a music school, I would have preferred that you could have the ability to perform some jazz, to show some compositions, to play classical, so that you can be assessed in the totality of things and the breadth of your skills as a musician, rather than, well, you can only audition up for the classical department, or you can audition for the jazz department, but you can't do both, or you can't just have one audition where you show, look, I know 100 jazz tunes, and I can solo, and I can play this concerto too. Because to me, that's really interesting. Like a student who can do both of those things pretty well, or very well, should be assessed based on all the things they bring to the table as a musician. And so most universities do not provide for that in an audition, let alone once you start on the path, giving you access to a path like this. And a lot of jazz programs will say, well, you can't study jazz in our department because we don't have a jazz violin teacher. That's, you know, that's ridiculous too. So you should be able to study jazz violin with a saxophonist or a pianist. Those people should be able to teach. I mean, I've taught saxophone players. I've taught piano players. I teach guitar players, and I don't play those instruments. I play guitar, but like I would teach musicians how to play, how to become better musicians, even if I don't teach their instrument, because I'm teaching them music. So universities, the professors at universities should be able to do that. Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah.
And how important do you consider improvisation to be in your musical and personal life?
I think it's really important. I think that...
Philosophy question, maybe.
Well, I think that I already addressed it earlier, but the ability to have a relationship with my instrument and a relationship with music on my own terms, where I can craft my own values around, you know, and intentions around expressing myself musically. That's very important. And it's important for every human being to be able to express their own intentions, their own values, and goals, and a vision for their life, and to have metrics that they live by in accordance with that. And this is a part of the self-development of any person. And I think that our relationship with music parallels that. And so improvisation allows, it facilitates this deeper self-determined relationship and evolution versus always measuring yourself against some standard that's been set by everybody else on the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. It's just, of course I love the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto too. That's fine. But I don't want it to be the only metric out there for my development as a musician. And then also from a social standpoint and a more holistic standpoint, it's like the only way to play the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto is if you have a concert with either piano or an orchestra. That's very impractical. But for me, as an improviser, I can have a relationship with many types of musicians in many contexts and many places around the world. And this is very valuable. This is very important.
And do you think improvisation can change the way we observe and understand our inner natural and emotional world? Do you think improvisation is a tool through which you can measure your instrumental skills and creativity?
Yeah, for sure.
Question in one.
Yeah. To measure our instrumental skills and creativity, for sure, improvisation, it allows us actually to define the skills that we want to develop. We define, what does it even mean? Like this idea of having chops, being virtuosic, having technique. What technique are you referring to? Like the Tchaikovsky violin concerto, it requires certain techniques. It does not require other techniques. So even just the violin as an instrument has actually been very limited in terms of what techniques and what skills are considered to be valuable. But there are so many other techniques and skills that can be learned and applied on the instrument if we change how we think about it. So definitely. Now, but as far as our inner and emotional world, yes, I've been teaching Zoom classes and live classes now for a long time, for several years now, in which I'm really trying to teach the class like a yoga class. So when you take a yoga class, everybody knows that we're engaging with the body, but we're also engaging with the mind and the emotions. And we're trying to learn to have emotional regulation. So when you go to a yoga class, you're putting your body into certain poses, which require a physical strength and flexibility and things like this. But most yoga teachers will also strongly encourage you to go into your emotions. And this can be practiced so that we learn to foster and cultivate the regulation of our emotions, which is so important. So I believe that very much in the same way we can do this through our musical practice. And improvisation, I believe, is a unique portal or gateway for this, because we are choosing what we play. And so it's like in yoga, you have a certain form where your body has to be twisted in a certain way, but it doesn't have that much complexity. And so most people can do most of the forms. So in the same way, if we use improvisation music with simple, what I call elemental forms, like playing half notes or playing quarter notes or playing long bows, like, but choosing the notes, most people can understand these forms. It's not playing a concerto. So we don't get lost in the intellectual and the physical side. We can actually get deeper into the emotional side. So I think this is very important.
Thank you. And do you think that improvisation has had important repercussions on your interpersonal relationships and other aspects of your life, or the life with your students too?
I especially feel that many of my students, definitely for me, being an improviser has been very validating for me, as I've shared, because, and mainly not because of quote unquote virtuosity, but I believe what's satisfying for me is to feel the sense that I sound like me, and to feel an alignment with who I am, and to feel a pride in that this is me. Obviously, if I play like me in any musical situation, I also want to be musical, which means all the things that means to me. It's, you know, playing in tune, playing in time, being supportive of other musicians, creating tension, releasing tension, making something that's beautiful or interesting, whatever that being musical is. But also, it's the sense that I have that I am being authentically myself and I'm being received and sharing that. So that's very important. But I also think it's really important for my relationship with my students, the students that I have, which many students, adults, teenagers, kids to amateurs, professionals, to see that they benefit from that feeling, that validation. When I hear a student perform, I hear beauty. I hear originality. When I've heard you play, I think you sound beautiful. I hear Marcello. That is Marcello. And I love to hear you play. And I feel that about pretty much every one of my students. And I think it's really important for them to feel that validity and that practice in this way is a practice of becoming a better friend to ourselves, of validating ourselves, of appreciating ourselves, forgiving ourselves, of knowing that I am enough and really believing this. And I think that people need this. We need and we deserve to know that I am enough. And I think that many people, and I have been one of these people, suffer from feeling I am not enough. And why should we have this pain in our life? And so if we're going to play music, it should serve this. Should serve this for me to feel I am enough, to reinforce that I am enough. Not to, I still can't play in tune. Oh, I still can't play that passage from that Paganini. I'm not enough. It's not healthy.
I totally agree. I believe it's a fundamental point of the to study music, to study an instrument. It's very important. Thank you so much. And about, do you think that practice the improvisation in the educational process helps the development of emotional intelligence, instant problem solving, making decision on the spot, correcting mistakes and learning from them? Can I add another little point? It's to transform a mistake in research.
Here's what I'll say. I think that within jazz, within the field of jazz education, or for that matter, within probably people that are studying, you referenced gospel music earlier, or bluegrass music, or other improvisational music. Look, there are plenty of instances in all of these different, we'll say, cultures of music education around the world, where it's unhealthy, where it's just as unhealthy as studying classical music can also be. And by the same token, you can have very healthy culture learning classical music. I think what's important is have teachers and institutions that are cultivating healthy relationships with the students among themselves, within themselves and to other musicians and audiences. But definitely improvisation in some unique ways can cultivate this, because it's an equalizer, because not everybody can play at the same ability, quote unquote, by certain standards. But if you're allowed to create your own standards and create your own language as a musician, then this legitimately changes the definition of the standards. Legitimately. Like Tchaikovsky violin concerto, there is a standard that is defined. And it requires certain abilities. Maybe a violinist with two fingers maybe could never play that piece of music. But a violinist with two fingers could create their own music and different standards that make that music legitimately beautiful. And this is the type of cultivation that should be done also in jazz, also in any culture of music, is to foster this, in my opinion.
The focus of this question is to understand your opinion also, if you think that improvisation for its nature, that is immediately in that moment, it's like a gym, it's a trainer, to train
problem solving
too. Yeah. What do you think about this?
I think that
you have to understand how to play in that moment. If a chord change, you have to change immediately because the guitar player, for example, changed.
For my tastes, this can be a little bit too narrow of a focus, and it depends how we define improvisation. I would say more broadly, creative processes, because I think that improvisation should be understood as something that can occur in many different formats and situations. There are many contexts in which improvisation can take place. So, for example, if a solo individual person is improvising without a predefined structure, this is very different than if you're playing with another musician over a defined structure, right? And I also would go even more broadly than that and say that it's not just improvising in the moment, but it's the process of listening back and then evolving over time as an improviser, but also as a composer and also as an arranger. I think it's all these things can be more fluidly incorporated into the question. Even if I try to answer the question as it's given, I would say it really depends, because improvisation, it falls into different situations and contexts, and it acts differently in those different contexts.
Yes, sure.
But yes, in general, the creative process helps us solve problems, for sure. It helps us find motivation. It helps us gain more skill. It helps us become better violin players, quote unquote. but can help us develop our technique better, in my opinion, yes to all those things.
And does the practice of the 12th question, does the practice of improvisation help cause a state of flow in the learner?
Yes.
Does it influence in generating emotions?
Absolutely, especially when it is cultivated. So again, there are many examples where people are being taught to improvise, but it's not being cultivated in a healthy way. So they're developing a antagonistic relationship with practice because they're struggling. And so it's reinforcing negativity that they're feeling and that they're hitting a wall. So it's critical that when we teach people how to practice improvisation, that we're doing it well, that we're doing it in a gentle way that is matched with where they are, just like any teaching. I'm sure in Italy, it's the same. To be a teacher, that you have to meet the student where they're at, and you need to come from a place of love. So these things are absolutely critical, to meet the student where they're at and to come from a place of love. If we can do this, and if the teacher really understands the material and the frameworks, these three things, then we can cultivate a state of flow in the learner and generating positive emotions, I would say.
Do you think improvisation contributes to the learner's training? Straightening?
Yes, yes. Now, when you say memory, I'm not sure. Attention, yes. Concentration, yes. Training of technical facility, yes.
Harmonic and musical understanding.
Yeah, it depends. It depends. You can improvise. You're going to probably develop some harmonic understanding, but not necessarily. And musical understanding, sure. Musical understanding, but it depends. You could improvise your whole life and still then never understand grand harmony or understand like certain types of musical understanding. But it certainly can, if it's cultivated in the right ways. Coordination of mind, body, movement. Yeah, I would say for sure.
Well, when I play a game back now, after studying improvisation, I understand the harmonic relationship. Oh, okay, it's a chord of tension. This is a release moment. This chord has a function, particular function, this.
Yeah, but you're making an assumption, though. When someone improvises, that they are practicing improvising over the chord progressions that Bach uses. That's not all improvisation.
Yes.
Not all improvisation is improvisation over harmonies and or specific harmonic chord improvisation that's modal. There's improvisation that's playing over chord progressions that are different types of chord progressions that sound different than Bach. And then there's improvisation that is playing over non-tonal structures. So if you practice improvising over non-tonal structures, it's not necessarily going to help you understand the harmony of Bach, in my opinion. And so that's
fine. And what is the role of improvisation in the interaction that occurs in a jam session, improvisation workshop, or during a live performance? To what extent do you think it can be a life gymnastic, democratic moment through which to learn how to listen, dialogue, support each other, or take turns taking initiatives in musical dialogue?
1000%. When we develop an awareness of how we exist in the context of other people in a community, this is about how loud are we compared to someone else? How quiet are we compared to someone else? Are we supporting someone else? Are we listening to someone else? Are we being compassionate of someone else? Are we helping someone else or hurting someone else? Are we getting in someone else's way, or are we lifting someone up? 1000% analogous and very useful to study these dynamics as they play out in a musical situation, especially for awareness. Awareness. And I know that you're a teacher, so you see children every day who are struggling to gain more awareness about how their actions, how they're speaking and the words that they say, how their physical presence affects other people around them. And so this is really important.
What extent do you think that the practice of improvisation, understood as an improvisation workshop within the course of study, can be instrumental in relationships with others as a moment to break out of the isolation into which we increasingly fall today?
Yeah, 1000%. Just like practicing string quartets or string trios or piano trios in the classical chamber music tradition, this is where interpersonal dynamics get to be workshopped, leadership, teamwork, all these things. And I would say they can be developed even more profoundly in the context of improvisation because each participant is defining the problem. They're not just being given a problem. When we play a Mozart string quartet, we're all given a problem and we have to solve that problem in accordance with standards. And of course, we interpret those standards a little bit, right? And so it's great. Chamber music is such a great process, right? But when we're improvising in chamber music, I think it can be even deeper, especially when we're composing or we're using more elemental types of structures, not just playing a jazz tune. Because even if you're playing a jazz tune, at a certain point, it becomes more just like playing classical music, honestly. There's more standards that have already been established. But when we're composing together and playing more free type of structures, there gets to be so much collaboration in defining the problems. And it's like gameplay, like games. It's let's make games together and let's play the games. And let's share in understanding the rules, forming agreements. But there's aspects that are different than games too. But it's like collaborative game, not antagonistic game, right? So this is beautiful. It's very important.
And this is the problem of the 100% of the musician, above all the classical musician, the stage free. And what do you think about the relationship between improvisation and stage free?
Stage fright.
Stage fright. Sorry.
I think it absolutely can help us manage performance anxiety during a live performance for reasons I've given before. Number one, because we are developing more confidence in who we are and what we can do and how we can be powerful and valuable given whatever abilities we have. So for this reason, number one, but number two, a very practical point is that you can choose to not play a certain note. You can just choose to not play. And this can have a very relaxing effect. So if you're playing the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, there is not a choice to not play the difficult passage. But if you're improvising, there is a choice. I don't have to make that shift. I don't have to play something that's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. So in many ways, it can assist with stage fright. Yeah. 1,000%. Yeah. And that's an important value of it.
Okay. And what rule? Sorry for the pronunciation of
what role? Yes, technology.
What role do you think technology plays
in
the life of students or teaching?
I think we should use whatever technology helps us, you know, always. And sometimes for me, I do most of my composition work with a pencil and paper, and I might use the recording device on my phone to record things. I would generally say use whatever works for you and don't get caught up in unnecessary complexity. But people have different relationships with technology, so they should use whatever technology actually helps them and not let it be a hindrance. Sometimes people stop doing something because they don't have the technology. We shouldn't let it stop us. But I think technology is helpful. I think a violin is actually technology. What's the difference?
Okay. And about the function of digital applications, what digital applications do you think are useful now for musicians, education and improvisational skills? And I wrote some examples.
Everything here that you put, these are all useful. I think that YouTube and just the access to view works has really transformed our ability worldwide. And, you know, when I do a lot of group lessons on Zoom and private lessons on Zoom, I think it's really important. I have 1,000 videos for free on my YouTube channel. It's helped a lot of people. People have told me. So I agree with everything you said here.
Okay. And you, in the last question, reply me that it's technology, it's absolutely 100% useful and important. But do you think there is a line between the resource and the rival? Or do you sometimes we use technology for everything? Okay. For to Google Map to drive, to for everything.
Yeah,
now, if without Google Drive, many people, I'm sure, they don't maybe can go to the world, the job where they come every day. But I don't know in another.
No, it's a really good, that's a great.
The risk is to lose abilities.
You're absolutely, I'm really, impressed with that analogy, because that's absolutely true for me when it comes to using GPS on Google Maps, for example. I can't find my, I've lived in this town for 9 years and I can't find my way anywhere without GPS. So that's really funny. I'm sure that's true in the use of music technology in some ways. I'm sure it is. And we just have to be mindful of that. That's why I always go back to simplicity. I think it's good to go back and forth between using technology and going away from technology. And it's good to pivot between both. Sure.
I mean, do you think that it's possible to have a rival? Because the AI can be something, can do something better of us.
My feeling, I don't consider myself an authority on this, but my feeling is that it's harder for musicians to make a living as to make money playing music. It's just, that's my feeling, because revenue from CDs is gone. There is a lot of digital music available and it's cheap. That does feel like a pressure, but I just don't know. I'm not an authority. I'd like to believe that there's still a value for a human making live music, but I just don't know. I haven't thought about that. I haven't seen the data.
And the point, maybe the question is not exactly, but the point of this question is, do you think that practice improvisation can, the individual skills to go on, to grow up?
I don't know. I just don't know.
If you read the
20th question, with the advent of artificial intelligence, can the study of improvisation act as a counterbalance to the standardization demanded by an industrial educational vision, which tends towards a homogenization of the individual and students and mere consumer? I don't know. There's a lot of, that question's very loaded, so I'm just not sure. 21, what would you suggest to music students or performers who have never practiced improvisation? Start, take my class, join my class. What would you like to say to teachers who do not know the potential of this practice and consider it a danger? Same thing, take my class. If you're a teacher, take my class. I will say that I understand why people are frustrated and feel like they can't do it. I think that anybody can learn it, but you do need a supportive environment and the right frameworks to help you have more positive experiences with it. So I understand why people have been frustrated, because they've had bad experiences with not the best teaching experiences, in addition to other things.
The 22nd question is because in my experience, many teachers don't improvise, but your hands can be damaged if you improvise, if you try to play other music that is not classical music. It's a risk.
Oh, yeah. So you're saying here, some people consider practicing improvisation a danger and an obstacle to the development of technique, as well as a distraction to less important and less cultured genres of music. Right. Okay. There's a lot in this. So first of all, it's not just about the practice of improvisation. It's about opening ourselves to appreciating other genres of music and recognizing that they are equally as important and deep and valid and meaningful and beautiful as Western European classical music. Yes. And I totally agree with that, that it is important to consider that other genres of music are equally important and deep and valuable and meaningful. And that we run the risk of, if we fall into this trap of believing that Western European music is like better or more important or whatever than other music, that it really is taking a white supremacist standpoint, even if someone doesn't realize that they're doing that. And I believe that's a problem. I absolutely believe it's a problem. By even just considering the possibility that other genres of music are equally important and meaningful and valid, even if we haven't been exposed yet to them sufficiently, by even just open that possibility in your mind, you're taking a step forward towards love, towards really having a deeper compassion and empathy for other people in the world. And this is going to help you be a bigger and better person, period. I just believe that. So obviously we're not all exposed to all things. I haven't been that exposed to music from India. I don't know all the music from India. So if I listen to it, I may not initially appreciate it as much as if I spend more time with it. Just like food, just like anything, literature, right? We should consider the possibility that things we have not been exposed to have a depth that we are not yet able to appreciate, and that it requires time and exposure to appreciate those things. And there's an analogy with people. We see people, cultures, groups of people, individuals that we have that seems at first foreign or exotic to us. We should start with the assumption coming from love and curiosity, and to try to understand people, period. With understanding comes more appreciation and more education and more learning and more enrichment for ourselves. And at the same time, it allows us to express compassion and listening towards other people in the world. And that's what we need in this world. It's good for the world, but it's also good for us. So I feel strongly about that. Yeah. And people in classical music, this tends to be a problem. And so in the classical music community music, but frankly, in the jazz music community, the same thing could be true, right? It can happen. This is a human issue. This can happen for many humans. But those of us that are in privileged positions, they have to take a higher responsibility. And if we have a privilege, if we have power, then maybe we have less vision. So we need to open our eyes.
Thank you so much for your time.
This is great. Really good questions. I love your project. Love what you're doing. Love you, man. You're awesome.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on your podcast app. Share it with others who could benefit. And if you'd like to diversify your teaching to incorporate harmony, improvisation, eclectic styles, and related skills for yourself and or your students, visit christianhouse.com or creativestrings.org. You can also reach me directly. I check my email at chris@christianhouse.com. Again, reach out to me, chris@christianhouse.com, and I would love to discuss with you ways that we can support you in your growth and in supporting your students. So thank you again, and we will see you on the next episode.